Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, Pastor Rick Bowes and I are talking with Dr. Elmer Towns. He's written a book called Into the Future. Dr. Towns is one of the founders of Liberty University in Virginia. He has written scores of books, and we welcome him to Life Quest.
Rick and I both have been pastors for many years, and you bring in a new concept or a new direction to fulfilling the gospel or to connecting with people. Well, we've never done it that way here, is the attitude of some folk. And sometimes they're the leaders in the church.
Yeah, that's true. What we're trying to say is that there are many different ways to do, for instance, servant evangelism. We have a chapter that talks about what you want to do is to enter the world of Cheers, Friends, and Seinfeld.
I was just looking at that. All of those TV programs emphasize friendship.
That's right, friendship. And so, therefore, people want to come to a church where they know people. And they come, we always say the platform attracts, but small groups are what bond people and keep people into a church. You've got to have relationships if you want to keep them in the church. And so that becomes very important to us, to try to get people to know one another, to bond to a local church, to get to know friends. That's so important.
And so those are specific tasks that and involvements that can happen in any local church regardless of the size of its congregation.
If you don't get people involved, you're going to lose them. I have a new program I'm pushing, and I'm calling it Prayer Partners. And it's the idea of I'm recruiting a group of people to pray with me, not to pray just for me, but to pray with me. And I think my class has known over the years that I have prayed for everyone. Now when I started asking who wants to pray with me for other people, I am finding people coming out of the woodwork who are volunteering. This thing is just getting almost out of control by the number of people, and we are going to call all of our shut-ins and pray with them over the phone. And then, after we pray with them over the phone, we're going to write our shut-ins and actually write out the prayer, what we are praying for them, so that they can have a copy of it. Now, we've got several things. We're going to relate people in the church to people who are not in the church and how we can pray for them. We've got a whole network system. Our prayer meeting each Wednesday night, we put out a list of the sick. And probably, just, I don't want to exaggerate, there's 200, 300 people on that list who are sick. So my class is going to call every one of them and pray for their sickness, pray for what is their problem. So in addition to praying for our shut-ins, which we probably have about 700, and the sick, which we'll have 300, that means 1,000 phone calls a week from a class of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
So we're going to network, and so that's what we talk about when we say in our chapter, Enter the World of Cheers, Friends, and Seinfeld.
Dr. Towns, I have a question.
Yes.
As a pastor of a church, I know a lot of people come to the church, and they've been beaten and bruised by life, and they come in with the attitude, you know, we're so exhausted and disabled by life, we need to be ministered to. We don't have enough energy to minister to someone else. What do you do about that?
Okay, in each of the 14 chapters, we give a thumbnail sketch of a church that's doing what we're talking about. And there's a Vineyard church in Cincinnati, Ohio, that they coined a phrase they call servant evangelism. And people have forgotten that Jesus went around with a towel and a basin to serve people.
Yes.
And we've forgotten that. So here's a church that says, we don't do traditional evangelism and knocking on doors and passing out tracts. And we do no advertising to invite people to come to our church. But in 15 years, they have grown. I don't want to give numbers because it blows people away. But they've grown by servant evangelism. The pastor gets a bucket and a mop and a brush, and he goes around to convenience stores and filling stations and says, may I clean your bathroom for you? Why would you do that? People asked. He said, I want to be to Jesus what Jesus would do. He would serve you. And he goes in, he cleans bathrooms, would be nice for other people. And he says, I want everyone in my church to be a servant. And the young people go around washing cars for others. They make a big deal of being servants to other people.
Not just as a fundraiser.
Not as a fundraiser. That's right. That's a good way. And this is there was a city park on the west side of Cincinnati that had been taken over by drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they worked with the police to get the park cleaned up of drug dealers. And then they went in, completely replanted, put new bushes in, went into the bathroom, put in new fixtures, completely cleaned the thing up, and put in new benches. The church raised a good amount of money to do all of the fixtures. And when they got ready to dedicate the park back to the city,
mm-hmm.
The mayor came, city councilman came, and they had 4,000 to 5,000 people from the surrounding neighborhood come out to that park dedication. They had
really?
A concert there, big stage the city put up for them, and the city has provided the speakers, but they provided the music,
mm-hmm.
and they dedicated it and said, hey, this church is not here to get your money, to get you to do something for us. We're here to do something for you. This is what this is the Jesus we serve, and we want you to love it. And they prayed and dedicated the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to the pastor, and he said, you know, when we go by that park, we see people using it all the time. And he said, what we do is we do servant evangelism to serve the people the best way we know how.
That's fantastic.
So what you're saying is that if the pastor has this vision, mm-hmm. and if he articulates the vision and the philosophy, yeah. and then if he practices it himself,
yeah.
the church can be transformed.
Right. Now, let me give you the motto for this church.
Okay.
We believe small things done with great love will change the world.
Mm.
So many of us want to do big things.
Right.
But here's a church that teaches its people to do small
yeah.
things, and that every person ought to be a servant. Now, should every church follow this example?
Mm-hmm.
No. Now, you've got a place where a John MacArthur has a great ministry of it's the Word of God that changes lives.
Right.
You've got a Jack Hayford. I forgot to talk about my pile of books that are the worship books, you know.
Yes.
And you've got to look at worship today, and
right.
we are worshiping God, and worship churches are growing.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these different models, as we talk about, in this book, we have 14 different models you can read, plus 14 different what we call eyewitness accounts.
Mm-hmm.
People who are representative of this feeling have been given a chance, have been given a page, and say, now, give us your expert opinion. Why have you done what you are doing?
Yes.
So we think this is a good book of tremendous resources for your church. Let's say you go to a church. Should your church practice servant evangelism?
Mm-hmm.
Well, read it, discuss it,
right.
and say, yeah, we can do more of that, or no, we can't.
Okay.
Should your church get into the new wave of praise worship music?
Uh-huh.
All right, read the chapter, look at it, discuss the pros, the cons,
yeah.
and make a decision.
Dwight Lainhoff, Rick Bowles with you, talking with Dr. Towns about his book, Into the Future. It's a Revell publication, a book that you can find at your Christian bookstore. There has been a lot of movement and direction in the church, in the churches, as you've already told us. One of the debates and discussions, even in this election year, Dr. Towns, is the question of how should the church be a social, a political force? If so, how much? What are your thoughts on this in the mission and the message and the ministry of churches today?
Okay. Well, let's go back about 50 years ago. We used to hear the phrase quite often, social gospel.
Right.
And I remember a young man watching the Billy Graham Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
And he was criticized for not having enough social gospel into his gospel of individual regeneration.
Yes.
And that was really a liberal factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then 25, 20 years ago, here comes the moral majority saying, we must get involved.
Mm-hmm.
We must do things. And now, I happened to work with Dr. Jerry Falwell, who
yes.
was the beginner of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Dr. Falwell did away with moral majority. And
mm-hmm.
I think he's speaking as an individual rather than trying to organize to get things done today. And I would say, where is the church today? How can we make the greatest impact? Obviously, the IRS will not let a church remain a church with 501c3 tax exemption
mm-hmm.
and take political positions. But
okay.
we can teach morality. We must teach people what is right, and we must teach people what is wrong. I think the greatest platform of the church is not teaching against evil, but the greatest platform of the church is basically teaching people, not just preaching, but teaching people why evil is wrong, the repercussions of what's wrong, And if we can do that, we can make an impact on society.
So real ethics education based in the scriptural morality is what you're talking about.
Yes. Well, let me use an illustration.
All right.
I remember when people used to preach against cigarettes, and we would call it sin.
Right.
But you know, I don't think our preaching ever did a thing to change the attitude of America about cigarettes.
Right.
Then we began teaching. There's a physical consequence. If you smoke cigarettes, you'll get cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Surgeon General supported, and then it was put on every pack of cigarettes. And today, because of a strong education platform, you can't smoke in a government building or an American airplane.
Right.
And in many states, you can't smoke in a restaurant.
Yeah.
How has all of that happened? Mm-hmm. By strong education rather than just pronouncements.
Just not against
pronouncements.
But condemnation is not enough.
That's right. I'm not against, and just calling something sin is not going to change the attitude of America that is no longer Christian. One chapter of the book, we talk about using the language of postmoderns.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a day where America can no longer be considered Christian.
Mm-hmm.
We live in what is called a post-Christian world,
where
people are no longer just atheists, they're militant atheists.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer just agnostics, they are militant agnostics. And they're no longer just evolutionists, they are militant evolutionists. And when we say militant, they want to strike down anything that used to be Christian
mm-hmm.
from our society.
Right.
What's our greatest platform? Our greatest platform is education.
Huh. Now, it brings us to something, because we are living in an age where we can't assume that they have the same religious upbringing or practices that maybe we have grown up with. Our neighbors might not have that. And so in order to engage unbelievers, isn't there a danger that Christians might compromise their faith in engaging worldly people?
I think there's always that danger, but sometimes we have to start where people are and bring them to where we are today. Now, we quote Chuck Colson, who says, we need to use stories that the world understands and then preach the gospel from those stories.
Mm.
And he uses the illustration of Les Miserables. I think it's a musical or
right.
a movie today. And it's the story of a man who was forgiven much and his life was transformed. And from that, you can preach the gospel to unsaved people, where if you start out with a Bible verse, they turn you off.
Right.
Now, the problem is, we've changed our definition of truth. And there was a time, I think you mentioned you talked to George Barna a couple
right.
of weeks ago.
Yes.
And I like Barna's statistics. 10 years ago, about 85% of the young people didn't believe that truth was absolute.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you go back 20 years before that, it was only about 50% of the people didn't believe that truth was absolute. Today, it's staggering how many of our young people in our schools and colleges do not believe the truth is absolute. Now, people listen to me and say, you're losing me, preacher. Dr. Towns, what in the world are you talking about? Two young people talk together. A young person says, you know, abortion is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a friend who had an abortion. It was right for her.
Yeah.
And so it's wrong for me. It's right for her. We know Huey at school. Now, I think that homosexuality is wrong, but he's a nice guy. I really like him. It's right for him. It fits for him. Therefore, truth can be true today and not true tomorrow, or it can be true for me and not true for you.
Okay.
But the one thing that they all say, if that's true, you've got a story. What's true for you? They want to hear your story.
Okay.
They want to hear everyone's story. What's true for you? Now, you say, tell your story. Jesus has done something for me. That's one of the greatest ways to talk about the gospel.
Not telling them what he's going to do for them.
Okay, well, guess what, Jesus? I really was racked with guilt. I couldn't forgive myself. I couldn't forgive a brother. And then you talk about how that was healed. You can get the story across. Now, in the chapter when we talk about postmoderns, we talk about a restaurant in Dallas that claimed, we have the best ribs
mm-hmm.
on this street.
Yeah.
And so the restaurant opened next door. We have the best ribs in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
And then down the street came a third restaurant, the best ribs in Texas.
Right.
And the fourth restaurant said, the best ribs in the world.
Yeah.
But now the fifth one came along, which is the postmodern. It said, the best ribs you've ever put in your mouth.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, and that's where it is today. It's not truth for the world or truth for Texas or truth for Dallas. It's what's true for you, the best ribs you've put in your mouth. So we have to say to the people today, Jesus is personal. Put him into your heart, and he will change your life. Now, when they know that Jesus will change their life, they will understand that Jesus said, I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. Mm-hmm. I am the beginning and the end. He is always true.
But that may take a bit before they come to that conclusion, but you have to start somewhere.
But you have to start with your story. Now, I teach large classes of freshmen here at Liberty University. When I say a large class, I love 400 freshmen to try to teach them the Old Testament. And they will all tell you, we like Dr. Towns' stories. Mm-hmm. And I will talk about how I struggled with this point and came to a conclusion. And when I show them how real it is for me, that's how I get them listening. Then I say, now let's talk about applying this to your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even young people who are Christian come to us. They are infected by the world's post-modernity.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you mean by in the postmodern world, the best sign says the least? What does that mean?
Well, what we're basically saying, the best sign doesn't claim to be the very best in the world.
Yeah.
It means it's the best for you.
Mm.
And therefore, this is the best for you. This is what will mean the most for you. And, of course, you picked up that question right out of the book. I recognize that. One more illustration before you get on.
Go ahead.
I like the three umpires.
Okay.
After the game is over, the three umpires are talking. And one umpire says, well, guys, I just want you to know, I haven't changed. I call them right where they are.
Right.
And the second umpire said, no. He says, I call them as I see them. And the third one says, you guys don't know what you're talking about. They ain't nothing till I call them. And, of course, that's the way it is with truth. They say, you know, sin is nothing until I call it a sin. If I call it a sin, it's a sin. If I don't call it a sin, it ain't a sin,
mm-hmm.
young people will say.
Right. I'm wondering here, you seem to be suggesting in a number of different ways that we have to be more creative in reaching out to the unchurched, that the traditional, maybe even the traditional hymns, the traditional forms of worship may need to be rethought.
Well, I think that worship is a relationship between you and God. And what we're suggesting is that if you get to Gen X today,
mm-hmm.
the one thing about Gen X is every one of them are different. But if you go back to the boomers, and I think I'm talking to two boomers
today.
Yeah,
I'm afraid so.
The one thing about boomers is that they conformed one to another. They
right.
were almost like a sorority or a fraternity. All the boomers, if you weren't like me, you weren't anything, you know. But the Gen X, if you want to be somebody, you've got to be absolutely different.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing, I was at an airport yesterday, and I struck up a conversation with a guy who had a ring in his nose. I'm talking about a ring as big as a silver dollar.
A serious ring.
And he had just put this thing in, and he was so proud of it. My first reaction is to clobber him over the head and tell him how stupid he is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to reach the kid. And so I said, I see the ring in your nose. I said, it reminds me of a lot of guys who are married. The wife leads. He said, what does that mean? And I said, he never heard that. And
uh-huh.
the ladies on both sides started laughing. I said, when you get married, the wife reads you around like a ring in the nose.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Yeah. And he never heard that. And so,
sure.
And I thought, boy, what a great chance to talk. So I started talking to this guy. And the lady next door, she said, you know, I live on a farm, and if you got a cow, especially a bull,
mm-hmm.
you put a ring in his nose, and you grab the ring and pull it, he'll go anywhere because it hurts if he doesn't go. He said, I never heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And he never heard the phrase of a ring in the nose.
Yeah.
See, that's where the young people are coming from.
Yeah.
And my first reaction would have been to clobber him, but then I started talking to him and found out he's a nice kid, you know. He just happened to have a ring in his nose.
Talking to people where they'll really listen
yeah.
to what you're saying. We've been looking at the church and its possibilities and how it reaches out. We are seeing what seems to be an interest in spiritual things, and yet sometimes people who are interested in spiritual things aren't coming to your traditional church on the corner with a cross on top. They're following cults that are growing fast in groups. How is there a parallel with Christian revivalism around the world, or what can we learn from this hunger for something spiritual?
Good question. Let me just say a couple of things. What is a cult? A cult is a religion that has something that's anti-Christian about it, a
mm-hmm.
plank in the platform.
Okay.
For instance, they will deny the deity of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
or they'll deny the blood atonement,
mm-hmm.
or the Trinity, or one of these basic premises of Christianity.
Right.
And cults seem to be growing. One of the things is that cults have the ability to form relationships.
Mm.
And they will form a relationship, and they will bring a person in, and the cult might come to your front door, And the first thing they do is to attack Christianity, and sometimes they'll take a verse out of context, they'll attack your church, they'll show how dead it is, and then they'll offer a great solution and friendship. And yes, cults are growing. I just read this morning, as I was going through my mail, a report that shows that in the last year, church attendance is up.
Hmm.
And we don't know whether that's a turn of the century or whether it was panic or fear of a Y2K. We don't know what, but last year, church attendance showed an uptrend, which it had not been shown in the last 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
However, we don't have a lot of time, but around the world, revival is happening, but it's not happening in the United States.
Yeah, we were surprised in talking with George Barna that he's saying, you know, we hear this and that, but the fact is, from his survey, that people aren't really having the revival that we certainly see in other parts of the world.
I have several books translated into foreign language, and they
right.
were telling me that of all of the books that I've been translated, my Arabic books, I have 2 books in Arabic, Praying the Lord's Prayer and Fasting for Spiritual Breakthrough.
Is that so?
And they're selling well in Iraq and Iran, of all places, in Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh.
There's an underground church that's going on there. And this underground church is being fed by the satellite and television. So you go to a hostile environment, but people are becoming Christians. And, of course, we all know that's what's happened in China, the great revival that's breaking out there.
But in fact, is this a pattern that we're seeing here, that in some of the places where the people are having a crisis or a difficult time, revival seems to be happening there specifically?
Well, revival is happening in first-generation Christianity.
Oh, I see.
Where it's a heathen society, people are turning to Jesus Christ. Hmm. In America, we have had a Christian society, and people have seen maybe the fakery of some Christians.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen some of the immorality in the pulpits of America, and it's mm-hmm. turned them off. That we have to deal with that. You know, we have to come back and say, what must we do? We must make sure that our church is healthy and our story of Jesus is true.
Dr. Towns, this is Rick Bowes again from Walla Walla. I have sensed a greater hunger in the last 3 years for true spirituality, maybe not organized religion, but true spirituality, just to meet God, touch God, enjoy God.
Well, let me just give an illustration. In the early 70s, late 60s, for 5 years in a row, I wrote books selling 100,000, 10 largest churches, America's fastest growing churches, Church of Flame, and everything was about outreach.
Yes.
But the last 5 to 7 years, my greatest selling books, greater than way back 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
have been on spirituality. I wrote a book on fasting, the biggest book
yes.
I've ever had, called Fasting for Spiritual Breakthrough.
Right.
I did a book on Praying the Lord's Prayer, 250,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
A book on meditation, a book on worship. And these books, individual Christianity, are selling much bigger than my big sellers 30 years ago.
And that, you're saying, you're concluding that this is reflecting some changes that are going on in the hearts of the general population?
We are moving from institutional Christianity
mm.
to individual Christianity.
All right. So how should, you know, the tendency of an institution is to protect itself. How should we react to that? I mean, a local church
Well, I keep saying, the thing that we attack most in this book is the bureaucratic institution that protects itself, that perpetuates its committees, that perpetuates its boards, that perpetuates its tradition without going back to the Word of God.
Mm.
We need to go back to Jesus Christ
mm.
in our church.
That's fascinating. Dr. Towns, we so much appreciate you taking the time, and we appreciate so much your book, Into the Future, a Fleming Revell publication. You get a copy at your Christian bookstore. They can order it for you. Please come and talk to us again at LifeQuest when you write another book, and I'm sure that you will.
I'll be happy to.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.